Welcome to the Players World Kitchen podcast, made in Wrexham and brought to you by Oscar Mayer, the Rugby Players Association and BrandMe. My name is Judith Batchelor and today as my guest in the studio, we have Scottish rugby legend Emma Wassell. I don't know where to begin to talk about Emma because she's got so much to share with us, an amazing career that is just full of, you know, world firsts and track records and achievements. But for those of you who don't know her, she debuted for the Scottish national team in 2014. And she has been playing for Scotland ever since. That is no mean feat. And in the 2014, she started the opening Six Nations match against Ireland and played in every subsequent national match until April 2022. A wrist injury and injuries, common problem with rugby players, calling a premature end to a record-shattering streak of 54 consecutive international appearances. I am exhausted just reading that, Emma. She played a key role in the decisive 59-3 victory against Colombia in February 22, booking Scotland's place in the Women's Rugby World Cup for the first time since 2010. And more about Rugby World Cups later. She's currently in between Premiership Women's Rugby clubs. She started with our local club, Ellen, in Scotland before joining Edinburgh's Murrayfield Wanderers and was previously at Loughborough Lightning. Welcome, Emma, and thank you for joining us on the show.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
I, as I'm reading that out, I'm just thinking what an awesome track record you've got and how brilliant it is that you are still, you know, at the height of your powers as a rugby a woman in the world of rugby.
Yeah, when you start playing, just getting your first cap seems amazing. And then you just keep working away and never really was something. I never had a goal to get 50 caps or so many consecutive caps. It was just an absolute dream to be able to play for Scotland. And then I don't know how it all happened. I don't know where the years went, but it just continued and continued. And then it wasn't until I got my 50th cap that it was really probably acknowledged that you've not missed a game since you started. And then I thought, you're right, I haven't. it becomes very all consuming, but purely out of choice, it became far more than just a hobby, a passion. It becomes a huge part of your life. So yeah, it was a pretty cool thing to do.
So when did you first pick up a rugby ball, and what was that moment when you thought, actually, I'm quite good at this, and I could do this, you know, pretty much full time?
So I went to school in Aberdeenshire, Ellen, and it's not a huge. Aberdeen is not a huge rugby city. It's very kind of football dominated. But we were lucky enough at Ellen. There was just a coach. And that's ultimately what it takes, is just coach or someone to be passionate about being able to grow a team or bring women into the game. And coach who'd kind of come to assembly with one of the more senior girls and had said they're really wanting to grow this team at Ellen. And there was a few of us that were like, should we give it a shot? And again, I've never played rugby before. My dad, he was a rugby player, so I knew it was in my blood somewhere. Yeah, and I thought it would be a good laugh. That wasn't it. It didn't feel that more than that. I was a gymnast when I was younger. I've been quite a girly girl growing up, and I probably had never really associated myself with playing it. But I was up for giving it a shot, and I thought, again, one of my best friends, it was her big sister who was really trying to bring people in.
All right.
So we were like, oh, we'll go along. And I honestly, from the first session, and I remember my mum dropping me off and saying, I don't know how long this is going to last. Like, almost having a bit of a laugh about it. And again, just because I didn't know anyone, any girls who'd played rugby, I probably thought I was so new to this, and this was brand new, which it wasn't. It just wasn't as widely known or seen.
It was a bit of a best kept secret, wasn't it? Yeah. Rugby, or women's rugby, yeah.
But then I was fortunate enough, I went to Heriot Watt University in Edinburgh. And in Edinburgh, there's a much larger interest in rugby. And that's kind of where I probably could have, at that point, I had to go to a senior team if I wanted to play, because I was 17 turning 18. But there is a big difference, I would say, in the step up from kind of under 18 rugby to senior rugby. So I was going from my school friends playing with them to going to Murrayfield Wanderers, which was a senior ladies team. And some of the girls there had played for Scotland. So the level really ramped up. And I, like, I've been quite honest about that. That first 3 weeks I went back to that training, I couldn't decide if it was for me, because it was such a huge step up in terms of, this was one of the top, at the time, top clubs in Scotland. And I'd gone from playing with my friends, and it probably in the nicest possible way, I thought I was really good. And I thought, I'm good at this. And then until you're kind of competing,
the benchmark just changed radically.
Yeah. And I was intimidated, probably very intimidated to start with, but which I now know with every rugby team you join, these people that you think might be scary are just always, they'll ultimately be your best friend, your sister, they'll be whatever you need. They're so welcoming, push you in the right way, made me more competitive, more kind of determined to actually push on. And that was how I kind of got into the under 20 Scotland setup. And then from there in 2014, I got called up for the first Six Nations, which was very cool.
And it is, it's a great example of not knowing what you're capable of until suddenly the benchmark or the bar is raised drastically, as you've described, and you're there and you're thinking, right, can I do this? And you're going through that mental challenge of, am I up for this? And then you suddenly realise that you are, and then your game has improved tremendously, as you've described, you know, you get called up for Scotland. But unless you put yourself in that environment and you're resilient in that environment, not to give up and, you know, throw that, you might never know what you're capable of.
And I think that, like, that is a huge thing. Like, I will say, quite honestly, that first 3 weeks that I had started at a brand new club, didn't know anyone. I was a young 17-year-old that had come from the northeast of Scotland. I didn't feel very good. I didn't really know anyone. I felt a wee bit intimidated, and I thought, oh, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I had to obviously travel there myself, and there was things, it probably would have been easy to be like, oh, I don't think I need to do this, because ultimately when I first started, I wasn't aware that you could play for Scotland. I didn't know of the opportunities that there were within women's rugby. And ultimately that wasn't why I was doing it. I did it because I enjoyed it. And I loved the game. I loved the physicality of it. And I enjoyed the team element of it. Mm. Again, I was from gymnastics, so going into rugby, so different. But but then when you do challenge yourself and you realise what you're capable of, and learning, if you're just open to it and then kind of leaning on the people that you have around you and just, embracing it, it really kind of was a bit of a pivotal moment, in the sense that I was like, I can actually compete with these people. Yeah. I can get better. And I think that was a big part of what pushed me to then go on to Scotland.
Yeah. Well, I think that whole point of when you stretch yourself and it works and there's a happy story at the end of it, you kind of think, actually, I feel confident if I was in another position like that, I would do the same thing. So talking of other positions like that and putting yourself in outside of your comfort zone into a completely new environment, you are here now in Wrexham. You've just filmed a TV program where you are the centre of attraction, cooking a meal, which is probably not something you've ever done before, with, you know, big film crew, guests in the studio, everyone looking at you. And you're put on the spot, and that is uncomfortable. So tell me about the whole experience and tell us what you cooked.
I think it was the whole production around it was incredible. I love cooking. I love food. I feel quite passionately about it, and particularly as an adult. And I would, if I'm a female athlete that is getting older, I am always consciously more aware of what I'm eating, what I'm cooking. But enjoyment is a huge part of it for me. So I thought it was going to be okay, because I like cooking, but when you've got time pressures, you've got people watching, chatting to you, try not to get distracted. Like it was a bit of a challenge, but it was good fun. I made something which I would probably have like the night before a game. So I had giant meatballs in a kind of tomato, red wine, rosemary sauce, and spaghetti. So nothing too complex, but still very tasty. And then there was some scaramouza on the top, actually loads of it, cheese in the end. But it was tight in the with the time constraints, because there's only so much you can let things sit away and cook. But no, it was good fun.
And the end result, were you pleased with it?
I was happy with it. Did think, again, there was things that you couldn't control, in the sense I probably would have let it simmer for a wee bit longer. But it was, everything went relatively to plan. I mean, we're lucky enough that kind of some of the vegetables were pre-chopped purely out of time constraints. But like, again, these are things I wouldn't even mind doing myself, but it did make it a little bit easier. And again, it's something I would probably make at home, and it's a nice homely meal.
Yeah, we'll come back to food later in the programme. But I'm also interested about your personal journey, because as well as being an absolute legend on the pitch, you have had some real challenges off the pitch in the last couple of years particularly. And I know that if you're happy to talk about it, then I think our listeners would be keen to hear about your stories.
Yeah, it's off. Like, again, you don't choose the things that kind of happen to you, but they do become a big part of who you are. And I very much embraced that in the last year, albeit it's been unfortunate. But a year ago, in the 2024 pre-season, I was training just in good health. It felt good, ready to kind of start a new season. And it was right kind of at the end of pre-season, before we were going into some test matches, that I developed this pain in my neck very randomly, nothing kind of visual, which would have suggested anything at all. I mean, we get a good laugh about it now, but at the time I kind of was on the phone to my Scottish rugby doctor, and I was like, it feels like something's stuck in my throat. And we'd kind of discussed it for the night. I'd come to the conclusion I had a bit of sourdough bread stuck in my throat, because that was almost a sensation. And then we'd said, maybe it's best I go to A&E to get removed, because I was like, there's something there.
I
don't know. And I'm very much a big believer in trust your gut. And I would say, I knew in my head, I did not have a clue it was something, what it was, but I knew it was something that an ibuprofen or a paracetamol wasn't going to get rid of it. So I was like, I'm just going to go to A&E. So I took myself off, drove to A&E myself, parked up, went in and said, I think I've got something lodged in my throat. Like, is there any way to get it? Anyway, you're waiting 2 hours odd. Over that kind of period of time, things did start to develop. My kind of neck started to swell up a bit. I was in quite a lot of pain. And then when they took me in, they kind of got me straight for a scan, because they couldn't really see much. So I went for a neck scan, a CT, and then came back waiting. And they were like, we need to get another scan of your chest. And I was like, what do you need? Because I had no... there was no sensation of pain in my chest. It felt almost in my throat. And then they were like, we think we can kind of see something, but we need a fuller picture. So I'm back in CT, back at waiting. And then I kind of got told, there's a mass. And at that time, I was kind of high on drugs, really. At that time, I'd been in A&E for hours. I wasn't really taking everything in. They were like,
hear what people are saying.
They were like, you're going to have to stay in overnight. And I at that point, you don't care. I'm like, whatever. Like, just make me feel better. Like, do whatever you can. But they took me up to the high dependency cardiothoracic ward. And I had actually one of my teammates with me. And it was the surgeon when we were in, one of the doctors, he was in there. And my teammate, Rona Lloyd, she was like, so could this be an abscess? Or because we hadn't really, like, they just said mass, and to us that didn't really mean a lot, and we were it was all quite overwhelming. And the doctor was like, oh no, it's a tumor. And it was a quite that blunt. Quickly, yeah, it's a tumor. And it was like, she won't need surgery tonight, but we need to figure out what's happening. And in that kind of moment, we were just in shock, as in, tumor obviously gives a lot of kind of scary connotations. Mm. So from that same day, I was doing a running session, preparing for test matches in a few weeks' time, to lying in the high dependency ward, being told I have a tumor in my chest, but they don't know what's going to happen. So no, it was a pretty scary time. And I think, obviously, to not top it all off, but being in that position was terrifying. And unfortunately, it was only 6 months earlier, I very suddenly lost my mum, which was ultimately the hardest thing I'll ever go through in my life. Sorry. But
no. It's a shock, isn't it? And you're not prepared for it. That's the thing.
I think it's, you know what, it's in over time you try process it, whether it is some people have to watch their parents maybe get ill, and it happens so suddenly, so there's never a good way.
No.
But I was going through this without her, and you know what, sometimes I think that was for the best, because I don't think any mum would want to see their daughter lying wired up, probably the way I had to see her. Mm. I would have hated her to see me like that, because again, I've always tried to be that kind of strong, independent woman, which she has brought me up to be. So no, it was a tough old year, to say the least. Yeah.
But I know exactly how you feel, because I've lost both my parents a long time ago, but one of them was very ill for a long time, and it was awful to watch. And you don't want to see anyone, any human being, let alone your loved ones, go through that. And then my mother died just like that, completely. Shock to everyone. One night she was there talking to her on the phone, next morning she wasn't. And there's no right way, but you get through it somehow. So
yeah, I think it's not a healer. It doesn't get easier, but your capacity to deal with it, almost, you work out how to deal with it. And I think most people know me, I'm a positive person, and I will always kind of try to make the most of a situation. And I think I am that way because that's how she brought me up to be. And I think she did a lot in her life, and you can reflect on things so much differently, maybe when they're not here, and whether that's right or wrong, but it definitely allows me to kind of look at life a little bit differently. And I will continue to hopefully see the positives in so many things, and actually appreciate so much things I have around me, and how lucky and blessed I really am. Because I think life is very short, so I will be hopefully just enjoying it for as long as I can.
I'm making the most of every moment.
Yeah.
My mother died 23 years ago, and there isn't a day when I don't think, I know what she would have said. I know what she would have been thinking, even if she never said it, because I knew exactly what would be going through her mind. I know what she'd be thinking about this conversation right now. So they never leave you. They never leave you. They're just there in a different capacity. That's the way I sort of cope with it. Really.
No, I feel I've realised you will not do anything. And I think there's probably going to be lots of bittersweet moments. Probably my most successful, best moments will feel like some of the hardest moments, because I would love them to be there. I'd love them to see it. But look, I know in spirit she is very much with me. And I think it gives me a huge drive to continue and hopefully do all these things while I can. And almost be her living legacy in some way, like everything that she's kind of brought to this world or given to me. Hopefully I can make the most of that while I can.
And on that thought, actually, because, you know, you won't appreciate this because you're a very modest person, but she would be immensely proud of you, and so are lots of other people. And you are a role model to other young women in the game. And we always ask this question about what would you tell your younger self? And I always think, oh, actually, my younger self wouldn't have listened because I was very, you know, didn't listen to anyone when I was younger. But, you know, what's your hope for young women joining the game now?
I think it is what I think so different and from when I started. And that's quite a common question, particularly women in sport. Who was your inspiration? And something I would say I've actually struggled with that question is I wouldn't say I had a lot of female role models in sport. Mm. And maybe I wasn't kind of looking out to seek for them, but ultimately it wasn't shown near as much as it is now. Definitely not rugby. Mm. Football, not really around the time I was starting. So in terms of visible team sport, female athletes, I hadn't even realised the potential that we could do all these things and we could reach the levels that we could. Mm. But to now, I don't know, just be in a position, again, when I got my first cap at home, it was in a crowd which had friends, family, and just maybe a few people that lived by, and there was a couple of seats in the stadium, but it wasn't a stadium, it was a stand.
Yeah.
And then people just were around the edge of the pitch. So when you're talking about an international, just people surrounded the way you would at an amateur club rugby game.
Yeah.
To now, I have this opportunity where I am playing in a stadium, which is often full. And you have young girls and boys who after the game are just dying to get their photo, their autograph, anything. And it's just still, it feels so foreign to me still that I'm like, yeah, of course. What, like, you want my autograph? But I don't, it just
is it
seems,
me or someone else? Yeah,
it seems mad, but it's so nice to hear that it becomes a huge motivating factor for everything we do, and particularly when you're representing your country, if you're inspiring a young girl to pick up a ball for the first time. And again, that might not be to inspire a young girl to play for Scotland, but for a young girl to get involved in sport, I just think is so important. Obviously, I'm an advocate for team sport, for everything it's given me in terms of friendships, confidence, kind of resilience. And I do the life events that I've gone through recently. I couldn't even, like, people have said, you're so brave, I can't believe you've got through it all. And I'm like, I'm telling you, every single girl I know in a rugby team has that in them. It's just built a huge level of kind of resilience within me. But also I've just got immense support of just so many incredible women that I do not know what I would have done without
them. And I know people talk about the rugby family, and again, easy to say, and it's not until you have moments like that that you realise just how close everyone is and how you all look out for each other.
Yeah.
And it's very special. It is very special.
It feels different, and I'm so lucky. When I was at school, I had a lovely friend group who I'm still so close with now. But just the way things go, everyone moves and you're not all together. So rugby has become my friendship group almost. But it is until something maybe happens, you realise the bond that you have with these players. I think the level to which they supported me when I was in probably some of the tough times of my life, and that being in hospital with me every single day, it was supporting me in any way they could. And obviously a lot of my teammates were at my mom's funeral. I have just been so immensely supported.
I remember reading about it at the time and seeing stuff on, you know, BBC and about this whole thing. And I just remember thinking, what amazing women and how special is all of that. And to hear you say that, I just, yeah.
I don't know if it's part of what we do on the pitch. We really, you kind of really give it all out there sometimes and you put your body through it for each other. And I think there is an element of that is when we go to play for Scotland, like you're doing it for these women around you. So why would you put yourself through that if you wouldn't support them in anything in life? But no, like in the rugby family kind of saying, it can be cliche and everyone kind of jokes about it. But yes, I've got my teammates. But the way even my teammates' parents, families have kind of done whatever they can to support me. And it goes beyond me, my brother as well, who doesn't have rugby, but has my rugby family. They have supported him. And that's almost more important to me, that it's not just me that's getting looked after or cared for, like he's considered in that, and that is just what I don't know embodies party. Kind of rugby family.
Gosh. And yeah, you've got this rugby family, and in fact this group of women cooking here over the last couple of days has felt like a family. And I know you haven't all known each other very well, but from the get-go, there was the level of noise and the laughter and the camaraderie around this, even though you are kind of competing in the kitchen. It's been brilliant.
It's something as well with rugby. I'm like, you play rugby, you can go anywhere in the world and you will have a group of women around you. And I just think, how incredible is that? Like, I now know if I was to move to the other side of the world, I'd find a rugby team and I'd probably meet some of my best friends. And I've already got plenty of them. We all know of each other because of playing rugby. But instantly when you're together, you feel like you're very good friends. You have so much in common, albeit being very different people. And I think that is just, the beauty of what rugby is.
And all those friends are about to become competitors in the World Cup. So, it becomes a very different dynamic. But again, it always amazes me at rugby. You can go onto that pitch and give 120% and battle away. And then everyone comes off the pitch and, shakes hands, has a hug, and everyone's, has huge respect for one another. That is special.
It is... I think, and ultimately, so many of us want the best for the women's game as well. We want the best for our teams, and we want to be able to perform individually as a team. But I think within this generation of players, we are all quite fiercely passionate about growing the game for everyone, because I think every single one of us has kind of seen the impact it's had on our lives. And actually the potential that you see within women, and I don't think some people that start rugby, they don't believe it themselves until it's brought out of them. And I was definitely in that category for a while, and I just think it is very special that it can do that.
Well, I think, this World Cup is going to be watched by more women than ever before. So I think there's a moment in time when all of those young women who are thinking, do you know what, I'd like to give rugby a try. August, September this year, they're going to see, the best there is battling it out. And I think people are going to be shocked at the quality and the entertainment value and the enjoyment that they get from the women's game.
I hope so. I really hope so. Again, I was fortunate enough to be at that World Cup in New Zealand, and it was an incredible experience and honestly a dream come true to be able to go to a World Cup. But to almost be what feels the closest I'll ever get to a home World Cup. England is very close to home, and knowing that you have your friends and family
It's going to be amazing.
I just think the potential it has in terms of growing the game in not just England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland. It's almost a home World Cup for all us as well, which makes it so exciting.
Extra special. Extra special.
And I think the level, the skill level, the intensity, everything about the women's game is just getting better and better. And that's ultimately down to the investment that is going into the game. And hopefully continues to go into the game, because I don't think we're even near the end product. And I think that's the bit that people don't even realise. This is, and I've been in the game 10 years and I'm like, we're just getting started still. But it's getting there.
I was going to say, we all feel that the game's making progress. We feel that the World Cup will be an amazing, sort of hopefully pivotal moment for the game. But it just needs to happen a lot faster.
I know.
It needs to happen a lot faster.
And I think hopefully this will be kind of like the catapult that that can really trigger a bit more movement around. And it is, and look, I am not naive to know that it's money. And I know how it works in terms of generating and being able to, but it's investment. And I can almost, in fact, I can guarantee that from the right investment, like what the outcome will be is so much bigger.
And positive in many ways. It's not just the game itself, and that the game thrives from a economic point of view and is financially sustainable, but actually the economic and social impacts for young girls everywhere is enormous. So yeah, looking forward to the World Cup, that's for sure,
and
and all that comes with it. We've talked about lots of things, and thank you for being so open and honest about your challenges and your journey. I think people will find it inspirational to listen to. Is there anything that you want to say that I haven't asked you, or that you?
No, I don't think so. I feel very lucky that, again, I'm to have obviously this platform. I started playing rugby and I fell in love with the game and kind of all the opportunities that I've come with it have allowed me to obviously speak in places like this. And I think I have been unlucky to an extent with my kind of illness and with my mum. And I just, when I speak about it, it's never in a sense of wanting a level of pity or anything, but it's actually just to talk about how kind of actually grateful I am for the support I have had in what a really difficult time has been. And hopefully, I don't know, I definitely have realised since that's happened to me that I try, not seek out, but I do look for people that have gone through similar situations and how they deal with it. And I just think if I could in any way support someone, in whether that's in women's rugby, to do with any kind of health challenge or doing with grief, that would mean so much to me, because I've kind of been allowed to be in this position where hopefully people can hear or maybe relate to anything that I've gone through that maybe they've gone through too.
Well, I'm sure there'll be lots of people listening to this that will relate to it. So thank you. As if you haven't been through enough, the ultimate question, actually. We're just about to desert island disc style, maroon you on a desert island. What would be your 3-course meal and drink that you would take with you on that desert island?
That is a tough one, because I would consider myself a foodie and I'm a big advocate for whatever country I'm in. I very much want to eat what is local to them and what they enjoy cooking. But I think starter would definitely be something seafood. So maybe a big plate of mussels with kind of like a garlic butter kind of, or scallops with black pudding, something like that. My main would probably be roast lamb with some kind of red wine sort of gravy and dauphinois potatoes with roasted vegetables.
Yes.
And my dessert, I do love chocolate, but I've got this thing about, I love a creme brulee, but depends how I feel. Sometimes you're too full for a dessert, but I do need a little bit of sweet, whereas I think I can hack a creme brulee, but I do love like a good melt-in-the-middle chocolate as well. And for my drink, I think red meat, I do enjoy a nice glass of red wine. But I would also maybe have a sneaky iron brew on the side as well.
The meal is making me feel quite hungry now. It's been a long day, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
I cannot thank you enough. And good luck in the World Cup. Goodness me.
Yeah. Very soon now.
It's very soon. But to our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to Emma and I talking. And if you have, please join us next week for our next guest on Players World Kitchen. But for now, goodbye from both of us from Wrexham. Goodbye.
Thank you.